Mr. Cheeseman, Real 42. The reception in England then was a good one.
Oh,
when you got home, I mean.
It was indeed, yes, of course. The usual, of course, you would expect from the woman. Oh, my father, of course, had died. My mother was not living where we were then. She was down in Yorkshire somewhere, but eventually called up when I went to see the missions at Hartlepool. The other thing was that I was still living, our rest of us, to all intents and purposes, and I was still living in pre-war England. And so it wasn't long for me to go in the shop and ask for a packet of 20 francs. Where's your coupons, sir? What coupons? I knew this, but it was...
Hadn't you been issued with ration books when you were sent on leave?
Oh, yes. But, it was forced to have. My wife sorted that out, which is, we got any ration cards, and things like that. And she knew what to do with them. I'm talking about when she let me out the road, you see, I'll go and ask her, I'll take her a box of chocolates or holding me out with you. But when I got back to the battalion again, after a glorious leave, we were still in East Anglia, and we were without any equipment whatsoever. It had to be brought back to the battalion had to be re-equipped. And the quickest way was, for tanks, was to send troops to the tank factory and bring them back, the drivers and what have you. But just in case, the fittest going to if anything goes wrong. But you imagine we were actually we would be re-equipped with the Crusader again, and they were being produced, or at least we were getting them from the producer, which was at the Cowley Works in Oxford, which is the other side of England. And we were literally taking them off the end of the assembly line, no adjustments, no running in whatsoever. I suppose the powers would be sitting in my nice quiet office at all. They can run them in on the road, things like that. But there's all the traffic on the road, and when the driver pulls his left stick and nothing happens, because he's running in, we had an awful lot of work to do on the road. I did three trips altogether, and in fact, on one occasion, the first occasion it was, the one driver, young driver, refused. He stopped the tank and refused to go. He said, "He put me on a charge there. I'm not driving. I'm not going to be responsible for smashing up." Well, there wasn't all that much traffic on the road, but it was enough. So I had to drive the tank. And I had the hair standing up on the back of what you can imagine, between Oxford and East Anglia, how many telegraph poles run down, bridge parapets,
Did you feel that they were not well manufactured at this point in time?
Yes. Oh, you see, we had a taste of the American tanks, they were infinitely better. I'm not saying that they were better designed, engineering-wise, nothing will beat the British tank. It was a beautiful piece of engineering.
Yes, we've got this one.
We didn't like them at all.
But I'm thinking in terms of the fact that you were taking the direct from the manufacturer and the people who'd made them, and did you feel that they hadn't been well made then? That there'd been lots of faults that should never have occurred on the tank in the manufacturing of it.
Speaking for myself, I did not progress was bloody well on piecework and what have you. It never crossed my mind that. It just said, why the hell are they giving us these monstrosities, as it were?
But you got them back to the camp anyway.
We got them back to the camp. Now, unlike the desert, well, of course, we'd already established a recce troop. Now, the recce troop this time was going to be equipped with the honey tank, which we had in the desert. No, not quite. this new type of one, the M3A3 instead of the M3, you know, this latest holy tank was diesel run, and it had an automatic gearbox. The problem there too. In other words, automatic transmission, no gear lever as such, you know, which I think was quite an event of those days. So I needed to go on a course to learn about these new tanks. Where else? But of course down to Bonington Campbell, the D&M school. I went along with another chap about to look for my last corporal. Down to the and other people from other units in the 7th Armoured Division. And I met there, I'll not say that at the moment. Anyway, we went down and we were given the freedom of the city. We were the first troops that had been announced in the world, and 7th Armoured Div, we could do no wrong. It was, in fact, it was rumoured that the RSM of had secretly written a letter to some modern latter-day Piper of Hamelin that come and get rid of all the rats. But anyway, that's it. We could do no wrong. And also, the 4 weekends that we were there, we were told we could have a pass, weekend pass, from the Friday afternoon until the Monday morning for the whole 4 weekends. Well, you know, mind you, the other chaps in there, oh my goodness, they were, you know, really desert rats, they were really jealous of us. And they had right to be, because, as I say, we were doing wrong. Anyway, we assembled in the school on the morning, into the classroom, and I sat, I don't know why, I just found myself in front seat, desk, and the instructor came in, plonked the workshop manuals on the desk in front of me, the table in front of me, whilst he sort of introduced himself and welcomed us. Whilst he's doing that, I was naughty, like, I got a hold of this one and I looked, and it was certainly the honey tank. It was the old one we had in the desert. Well, I said, excuse me, Scott. I said, this is the 5-cylinder, I forget the numbers, aero engine, what we wanted. Yes, it's most unusual, isn't it? I said, but I've come down here to learn about the one that the tank that's equipped with the diesel engine and the automatic gearbox. Oh yes, we've heard of that, but this is the one that was sent to us a week ago, and so actually we'll be learning this together with the instructor. I said, I know every flaming nut and bolt about the flaming thing, you know, we had them in the desert. Oh, just a moment, and up he went. And the chief instructor came back, maybe somebody, asked what have you, took me into his office and said, have you learned instructing at all, Father? Oh, yes, I enjoy it, Steve Harden. Oh, yes. As I could see me being sent back, you know, and these 4 weekends would disappear. I said, would you like to take my class? Well, I'd be delighted to. So I took the class. Now, the point is this, they've never had this tank down there, and so not only did I take the class of old chaps from the 7th Armoured, but also a few of the instructors that were down there, and one of them was the one officer, Hines, who was my corporal, recruit squad corporal, you know, and I also remember because one time he used to come up on the drill square, he'd come up with all sorts of different things. And one of them, it's also reminds us, I've got more bloody service on the chloroform, he's got a uniform. And I told him back, that was all in the mess, of course, you know, and I think I did tell him. But we had a very pleasant time. Now, let me tell you about one of these weekend passes, okay?
You didn't get the diesel-engined honey tank.
No.
So a bit of a waste of time, really.
Oh, well, actually, that was the worst, promotion-wise, that was the worst thing I could have done. But I'll come to that. But I'd like to tell you just about one weekend that I had. We decided, Mike and I, living at Rugby, me down at Bovington, the nearest central point was London. So we'd come to London. So when I got off the train at Waterloo, we'd go straight across to Euston or St. Pancras, I forget what, Euston. And we'd go off the train. And then we'd go to the rail transport officer's office in Euston and ask him about the any vacancies in the hotels. And of course, with the Seventh Army deal sign on your owners, you were given preferential treatment, and the tariff was lowered as well. But one weekend went down there, and went along to the rail transport office, and he said, he said, never mind about the hotel. He said, I've got the very thing for, I've been told, anyone that's respectable looking and belongs to the Seventh Army deal. And what had transpired is this married couple with our children, we've got a lovely flat in the heart of London. It really was beautiful. And found that they were away for the weekend, and they took the keys of that flat, the railway transport owners, and look, and that's for any. And I got that.
So you got the flat?
For nothing. And there was. Today, I could have made a fortune by pinching what was in there. Can you imagine that today?
Can we move on though? Yeah, because it's a little bit beyond the thing. When after the course and so on, where did you'd return to camp, no doubt?
When I came back to camp, the course and technical office realised that I'd wasted my time, and it was thrown beyond faulting like that. He wasn't best pleased, and so there was no use for me to say I'm only acting sergeant, can't have made up. You know, I was after the money as well. So I remained active sergeant, and of course I would in the course of time, I think was it 12 months, I think, I would become more substantial in that rank. But I went down a huge percentage of the 7th Army. They went down with malaria when I came back. I went down with malaria. I went down with more than malaria. When they took me to a temporary hospital that effectively had been settled, they found that I'd got pneumonia as well, and also a delayed reaction to the wound in my throat. And so, and I can't remember being taken from there to the Suffolk County Hospital in Newmarket, where they were, brought me in. And quite obviously been very seriously. By the way, my wife came was with me quite well. I must have been very seriously ill, because when I finished there, I didn't go to convalescent camp. I went to a convalescent home, which was the Bishop of Ely's Palace, which had been turned in for NCOs and equivalent ranks of the Army and Navy. And so, let's say in the Salvation Hospital, I chose to take and draw the cathedral or something. It'll be down there yet, I suppose.
So, what dates were these?
You pinpoint that absolutely great, because what I'm going to say next. I used to have a game of croquet on the lawn. Occasionally. Now, I was playing a game of croquet with an RAF flight sergeant when one of the young trainee cadet nurses came skipping out of the wings. They've landed! Our soldiers have landed in Normandy! So now that gives you the date, doesn't it?
So they looked after you there, did you? You were well treated.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Mm. And you had to go to bed in the afternoon, by the way, you know, and that sort of thing. But from there, I went to Kempston Convalescent Camp. That's just outside Bedford. like a prison of war. You couldn't get in and out of there at all. But anyway, I spent quite a while there, but I was never, I never got back to A1 physical standing again. In other words, no more active battalions, what have you. Which meant, of course, I lost my third table and I returned back to my horse of St. Angus full corporal. From Bedford, I was sent down to a temporary canvas camp just outside Colchester. It was a reinforcement unit. And we were there for a couple of weeks when we went down to Southampton, got the boat over to, I don't know what beach it was, but one of the beaches, and went back to France again. I was then in this reinforcement camp, temporary transport MCO, in charge of the transport. Outside Carl, I think, one of the incidents there was a French farmer came along and he said, could I, he wanted some essence, petrol. Why not? So I give him half a 4 gallon can, jelly can.
I think we've got this. This is where you were selling petrol, were you? Or was this in France, 1940?
No, this was where we were back selling petrol up at Birmingham. Yeah. So I said, go on, it's about 2 gallons. He'd come back a couple of days with the can, and apparently he'd boiled it out almost, and it was half full of Calvados. Need I say more?
What date was this when you got back to France?
What day did I have? The horse racing had started then. But I know the Derby, some big race like that, because I didn't win any, I had a bet on, you know. But then I can pinpoint it again, because came the time when Brussels was liberated. There's a bit for you. And they immediately decided they would set up a huge temporary training complex north of Brussels, a place called Wemmel, and just a few yards away from the Oyster Football Stadium. Now, this workshop complex was actually a huge area which meant to be a building site. And they put the roads down, but no buildings were put, you see. Now, the modus operandi of the workshop was that the tanks on transporters had come to the first point, as we call it, where the engine would be attended to, the tracks would be attended to, and that would become mobile. Then it would be driven from one point to the next point where tins, bins, latches and hatches, that's right, ammunition racks, and the doors and everything, that would be attended to. Then another point for machine guns. Then another point, the one that I eventually took over, was the main armament. I became an acting staff sergeant officer, looking after these guns and checking them, repairing where necessary, all that sort of thing. Now, whilst we were there,
this would be a big day for renewing tanks that would be knocked out, destroyed, or what have you.
Every tank that went up the front. Now I'm talking about the French and German, you know. Every tank that came up the and went up the front came from us. So some passed right through, Others were from where, so it was a variety of where you could pass one spoon and the other one you'd have a couple of days' work on, something like that. Repairing and checking and what have you, these guns. We had a big lorry with a jig crane on and a winch. Now the crane, of course, was obviously for taking the big heavy pieces out of the tank turret and taking to our workshop, covered in workshop, all the shoulders where they would be replaced or renewed. The winch would be for pulling the gun back to see if everything was okay against a gauge to see if the spring of the recoil was correct. There wasn't problems in there. And then quick release and see if the gun ran out nice and slowly with the hydraulic system as well. And that sort of thing. This is the sort of thing we were doing. It was very, very important, of course, all this. And it covered all the point one, we were point eight, I think, we're about a mile away. And Jerry, of course, knew all about this, definitely. And his V1s were trying to catch us. They were dropping short, almost shooting us. And one day I was inside there, and we finished, I was inspecting them at the time, inside I think the heaviest Churchill that was ever turned out that time was about 70 odd tons. Ooh, 4 inch thick armour. I was inspecting that 6 pound wing. And I heard boop, 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 boop. There he is, And the flame stopped. And a little while after, 2 seconds after, the boop, boop. And it turned. That's coming straight. Hey, I got back, because I've been gradually getting further now out of the cupola at the top of the tower as you come to lay, get back in again. I got back in the tank and held on to something, with both hands, opening my mouth so that the blast pressure would equalise and tore all the bodies, things like that. And the tank just did that. And this is in my mind, by the way. Those bombs? What the hell's London talking about? 25 pounders, worse than this. That's what I thought. But what actually happened was that I think there was 40 killed on there. That 70 ton Churchill tank had been lifted up, put down about 20 yards away, and actually bent in the middle. And the turret was me inside it further on. Now, after everybody got their death back, anyone alive in there, I was pulled out of the tank by a person who led me in one side apparently, and off to see if there's anybody else wanted me, and the ambulance took me away, and I woke up in the hospital, a civilian hospital in Brussels. Bruised all over where I'd been bashed around, and that was it, and of course, obviously concussed. And I apparently had been bleeding from every orifice in my body, eyes, ears, nose, and all. That flaming buzz bomb had dropped as close to me as what you are. Only, of course, there was a tent in between them. It had killed amongst them. The staff sergeant in charge of them, that's why I was promoted. In the meantime, by the way, I forgot to say that when I went there, I was after money. And I said, right, how about, I've been a sergeant, yes, you know, what about a package? Well, we can't promote you, you're our right hand corps. You're going to be Remy. I said, any chance of a transfer, he's no answer quite true. So the transfer had to come through War Office apparently, and I was waiting for this when this happened. So the transfer came through, and they immediately, again, it was without money, but that was it. And that's how I finished my war. In the meantime, by the way, whilst I was there, I did have to go, I forget now what it was for, but I had to go into Holland and a little bit of, there was a workshop up there, apparently. I think I was up there for about a fortnight. And I don't remember that because it was a mining village.
You finished your war there. When were you sent home on demob leave?
Just before Christmas, actually. Actually, after the...
This would be what,
1945. Actually, when V-Day came along, after that, the workshop stopped. And I was I stayed at the workshop billets, but I went to the other side of Brussels to a return store. All the tools and that coming in off the I had a crew of 12 soldiers and as many civilians inspecting to see that's okay, that isn't okay, the stuff that was okay, you registered and minerals yelled up, the stuff that was no scrap, you know, that sort of thing. Then, of course, the mob. Well, I was sent back to England. I was sent back to England and to Hereford, where I was demobbed, and I decided, I think I'd learned from you in the league, that I wouldn't get into a demob suit, and I stayed in the uniform. I wasn't even there a full day on the train again.
And you got your clothing in the usual way, did you? And medically examined as well, were you?
No.
What grade were you at this point in time?
I can't remember now, but as I say, I wasn't fit for
So you demobbed and came home.
That's it.
Did you have any pensions because of your various injuries and wounds?
No. So obviously I wasn't way down grade C or something like that, you know. I should think that had the war not been at that stage, say it had been at the main stage, you'd say you're fit with me back up the front. But because it was then the boys did have some humanity about them, so it would be a shame to, you know, send him up the front at this stage. He's been through an awful lot. I think it was probably quite a bit of that in it. Plus the fact of how on earth my wife ever managed to get through not only one but three dreaded telegrams.
How did you settle down in civilian life when you were demobbed?
Very badly. I had left, I forget now, it must have been 6 properties or something like that, which, you know, 7 days a week. And I started, I got a job as a fitter in the Eastern National Omnibus Company at Chelmsford. My wife and I said, look, we've got the whole of the land to choose from where we can stay. Do you want to go north? No, she said, fair enough. Where do you want? I'll let you go with your friend down to South End, up at East End. That's why we went there. I got this job in there, and I ran smack up against unions. Now, there's a place for unions, but I hate that union thing. And I remember now saying to the, I said, I have three cards. If you can't, this is a reserved occupation, you can't do that. So, yes, I can. So, you can't, this is, you aren't employing me. And next day I brought the discharge book. He said, you're still in the army, of course. I said, yes, give me my cards. But I did settle down, and what I found that I learned in the army, I could not have achieved what I achieved in Silver Street. It did that. The army has been my university. Given the chance over again, I would do exactly the same thing.